Chapter 35. The Coronation of Rhad the First. After our abrupt departure from the Coronet Council, I figured we'd be clapped in irons, or whatever it is that they do to people who manage to piss off rooms full of dukes. I didn't care. I hated this sort of politics, even as I participated in it. "So, how did we really do?" I asked out loud, as we retreated through the ornate halls, past five sets of ducal guards.
"Are you kidding?"
Penny asked deadpan. "I was worried there toward the end, but the more I think about the political situation, I think that was perfect, Min."
"What?"
I asked, skidding to a stop. "I thought you'd be livid. I just vented my spleen all over the Coronet Council, and probably pissed off the one duke who feels he owes me something.
How was that perfect?"
I demanded.
"Oh, the performance was rough in parts, but you made up for it with passion," she assured me. "To be honest, you scared the hell out of me when you started in about it not mattering who wore the crown, but that ended up being the best possible argument."
"I need an explanation," I pleaded. "I thought I just screwed up, excuse the expression, royally. And you're telling me,
if I had told you to go in there and have a fit, you would have botched it,"
she explained patiently. "You're no good at acting, not really. You have to remind them how inconsequential they really are in the scheme of things."
"You did," she said, shaking her head. "By calling into question even Rhad's suitability for the throne, you gave him just the argument he needed to make his best case for sitting there. If you had gone in as his obsequious lapdog, then the other dukes would have seen right through it."
"So you manipulated me."
"For the greater good,"
she assured me.
"But you surpassed my expectations with that little hissy fit. After this, there is no question as to whether or not there will be a king. There is only the question of who shall wear the crown. And Rhad has that sewn up now, thanks to you."
"Thanks to—" I was preparing a witty retort, when a well-dressed ducal castellan approached me with a deep and gracious bow. "Mage Lord Minilan," he said gravely. "Her Grace has requested the pleasure of your company in the fountains," he said so smoothly it could have issued from a pitcher of treacle. He waited just a moment, glanced briefly at Pentandra, and added, "I have no doubt that your mother, were she here, would advise you not to keep the Duchess waiting." He didn't say anything else. He didn't need to. I sighed and looked at Penny, speaking mind to mind. "I just got called in to get chewed out by the spymaster. Go back to the temple and do whatever it is you do when you aren't manipulating me. I'm going to see just how badly Mother thinks I've screwed up." "Let's go," I told the castellan, and Penny peeled off without a word. It turned out Mother quite agreed with Penny's glowing assessment of my performance.
"Really, my son?"
she said as she sat in repose on a swing in an elaborate water garden.
"You really must watch your manners around father."
The old matron was dressed in a bright yellow formal lounging gown, peppered with precious stones, and wearing the silver coronet she hoped to swap for a crown tomorrow. Around her were a half-dozen beautiful young ladies in waiting, and twice as many servants. The garden was elaborate and beautiful, the kind you only see in the estates of the wealthy and powerful. Many of the pieces were magical, contorting the fountain, spewing streams in all manner of ways nature never intended. It would have been fascinating if I hadn't been seated among the biggest and prettiest group of assassins in the duchies. "I believe the term we agreed upon was son-in-law, Mother," I corrected her.
"A son-in-law is as dear to a mother as a son, if he loves her daughter," she said, shaking her head. "And today you've done the family a great service."
"I believe we worked out the price for this," I reminded her. "Our charters. The moment Rhad has crown on head and quill in hand, they shall be among the first to bear the new royal seal," she assured me. "And after that, all the property, lands, and estates of the censorates will be turned over to, what did you call them? The arcane orders, specifically the militant orders of Horka and Hesia," I prompted her, "named for comrades of mine, fallen at Timberwatch in your service."
"And yours," she reminded me. Yes, you may inherit all of the arcane matters in the new realm and regulate them as you see fit. Your performance gave plenty of credence and credibility to what the Dukes of Vor and Merwin have already learned from their spies, that this is a necessary, if painful, step. They cannot disagree with the nature of the threat, nor deny the necessity of the remedy. She seemed to be almost purring with pleasure. And yet, while you're picking out your coronation robes, the hordes still march, I pointed out, and they will be unanswered unless that new crown comes with the authority to call men to arms to face it. My people grow uneasy at the continued promises of troops, but the troops rarely appear. The field is in chaos, Mother. If Father doesn't make a credible defense of the realm, that crown won't mean a damn thing.
I am not ignorant, son, she said sharply. We do realize the peril, and we have taken steps to counter it. Count Sego, she called, and in moments the soldier appeared, looking resigned to his fate.
If I was uncomfortable dealing with this coven of killers in satin and silk, Sego looked like he wanted to burst into flame on the spot.
Your Grace, he said with a stoic bow,
please tell the spellmonger about our little plan for conscription,
she almost sang. Count Sego heaved a great sigh, like he was delivering bad news.
Her Grace and her advisers have devised a scheme to ensure there are adequate forces for the defense of the realm. Henceforth, instead of execution or imprisonment, all common-born men convicted of crimes who can be taught to bear arms or toil in the service of the kingdom shall do so, as a merciful commitment of their sentence. The nobility found guilty of crimes against the realm will likewise be sentenced to service in the penumbra, excepting the case of high treason against their future majesties.
Oh, that sounds like fun, I said. I'd been drafted once.
All those who serve shall serve no less than 2 years, and some shall serve until death. All those who are thus sentenced shall bear as token of their service a simple black circle on a white field, indicating their dedication to defending the realm against the spawn of the Umbra. The Iron Ring, we're calling it, from one of Rad's speeches, about how we're going to build an iron ring around the neck of the Gavanni, a military order. Upon the successful completion of service, a man of the Iron Ring is free, with his debts and obligations expunged by a grateful kingdom. He sounded like he had practiced it. No doubt he had. He didn't look comfortable with it, despite the obvious military applications of the policy. I suddenly realized why.
That's where you're going to send your political prisoners, I gasped.
Mother smiled. How perceptive, son.
Any who dare rise in the rebellion against the crown will find themselves in irons, holding a spear, staring down a goblin charge, their lands forfeit to the crown for the duration of their service to pay for the war.
Of course, if they survive their term of service, they will be free to start over. Freemen, if poorer and less influential. I am not an ogre, my son.
My mind raced. That would be a terrible club to hold over the heads of the nobility. The great nobles I knew, and admittedly that number was low, weren't used to that kind of authority over their persons. There were counts and barons who ran their domains virtually independent of all but the most basic interactions with higher authority. I could see why Count Sego had mixed feelings about this. Why not just issue standard conscription orders and new taxes, like you did with the Phoenician campaign, I asked. That seemed to work just fine for that, and
that was a three-sided effort by 3 duchies,
the Duchess reminded me, not a sustained effort requiring this kind of manpower.
Really, spellmonger, I thought a man of action such as yourself would appreciate this. A new king means new customs, new laws, new authority,
she smiled. From minting fresh coin to defending the realm. When the goblins reach the heart of Gilmora, then the nobles will forget their objections and gladly send us their gallows fruit, and be especially prompt when it comes to payment of tribute. That had all sorts of implications I could only speculate about.
Why don't you and Sego go discuss the arcane military issues involved with this proposal? And we'll talk again later. We do have a lot to talk about, after all. All these new additions to the family.
I hear that your lady wife was gifted by Trigg and Ishi with a son, she said. I waited for her to mention the other child I no doubt had by now with her minion, Lady Isili, but she refrained. I suppose she wanted to save that for a special, more politically strategic time. In honour of your son's birth, a small token of the realm's admiration, she said, and a beautiful young woman in a bright pink gown approached me, bowed, and presented me with a small wooden box. It didn't explode or poison me when I took it, but I wouldn't have put it past her. Now, leave us. I have to meet with that bitch, the Duchess of Vore, and I have to have a fresh smile painted on my face. I took the box and left, with a bow, and with Count Sago escorting me. We waited until we were at the entrance of the Fountain Garden to speak. Your Excellency, please tell me that you are in as much need of a drink as I, I inquired of the soldier politely. Every time I meet with Her Grace, I seem to need one, he admitted. That whole business of the new conscription policy to get troops to the Penumbra Lands, the Iron Ring, that's going to come to mean a death sentence, you realize. And a very, very docile population, I agreed, if they can manage to enforce it. They can, we can, for a while, he admitted. If a few of the higher nobles resisted, there might be some doubt, but... Mother, I prompted, demonstrating I understood the incipient queen's real position at court to him. He sighed, relieved. Mother has spent the last 2 years ensuring no noble who could lead such a rebellion would consider such a thing, or she removed the noble. She turns the honest pursuit of war, as Duin intended, into a nest of vipers. Count Sago steered me into a plain, unmarked doorway in the middle of all the finery that was cleverly designed not to be noticed, and then down 3 stone steps to a cool, casual little room. There was a table, several chairs of a mean nature, a cupboard and ewer, and around the room were scattered ceremonial weapons, banners and other trophies of campaigns past. My refectory, when I'm on duty at the spire, he explained. My quarters are awash in spies. I cannot sup without one courtier or another trying to bribe themselves into influence, and even the whores a suspect. I had one of my sergeants fit out this room. It's supposed to be an armory. Only men of my guard are admitted. He took off his ridiculous-looking, wide-brimmed hat and pulled his formal gloves off disdainfully. A man needs a place he can retreat to and marshal his resources, he said, looking at me thoughtfully. I count myself honored, I said, taking off my own silly hat and leaning my rich-looking staff against the wall. Are you certain we are not overheard? He shrugged. You are the mage. I'm merely a soldier. Check for yourself. So I did. Surprisingly, there were no secret echo chambers or spells to communicate what was said here. Sago had successfully eluded detection. We seem to be private, I agreed. Good. That gives me some peace of mind. Do you know why I invited you here, Mage Lord? Call me Minilin, I said, realizing that this place was a respite from formality, where two men could discuss the matters of the world as men, and not as titles. And yes, I am curious. Because you are one of a handful of men who has consistently demonstrated your devotion to the security of the duchies, regardless of who you piss off. A man who will stand up to Duke Rod is rare, and a man willing to stand up to Mother once he understands her true nature is rarer still. Oh, I'm sure she'll stick a dagger in me at some point, I dismissed, as he took a cut glass bottle out of the cupboard with 2 matching glasses. I'm useful to her for the moment. Then you recognize your danger. Good, he nodded. I saw how you comported yourself at Timberwatch, and just now in council. Impressive. He seemed to be trying to make some decision, then sighed and decided. The God's truth, Minilin, is that I'm up to my eyeballs in vipers at court already, and a man needs allies. One of the first things that their majesties will do is constitute a royal guard and order the defense of the realm. I have knowledge that I am to keep my position for a time in the new regime, but I also fear that I will say the wrong thing and end up with some idiot who can't tell a squadron from a pauldron giving orders. The defense of the realm is my charge. I cannot fulfill it without someone watching my back.
Why me? I asked curiously as I sipped. The liquor was hard as ice, but nearly tasteless.
Because I think you are a man I could trust not to sell me out for his own advantage. You don't have ambition, not for position at court, at least, and you seem to have carved out one for yourself with even the court mage answering to you. You represent a power distinct and separate from Rad and his mundane supporters. We're all supporting Rad at the moment, but we're all equally worried.
I'm not anxious to meddle in politics at that level, I warned. The arcane orders are concerned with defense and research, the responsible use of magic, and the use of magic for the benefit of the people. Quite a lot of the militant element will overlap with yours, of course, as we prepared to dispatch troops of both sorts. But I do not wish to be a monarch. After ruling one tiny domain for less than a year, I already know what kind of monarch I'd be. An unhappy one. But if you need to work outside of the family, I said, with great deliberation, then yes, the orders will be glad to help you out. Under the wands, so to speak.
I see where you're leading, Sego said, nodding as he poured another shot. Likewise, should the arcane orders wish to work outside of filial notice, then a discreet inquiry from spellmonger to soldier is all that is required. He downed the shot without visible effect.
Then we have an understanding, I agreed, finishing my second sip of that potent liquor.
Now let's put on our silly hats and get back out there where we can be seen and noticed.
There was a lot of activity at our makeshift temple home that night as messengers and ambassadors came and went. Pentandra stayed awake far into the night, preparing for the long-awaited, long-ordained, and highly contrived surprise conclusion of the council that Rad be elevated to king to re-establish the kingdom. When the Council of Temples presented a similar plea, blessed by the gods and the clergy alike, then Rad would appear outside of the spire and receive the new crown, title, and swear mighty oaths on profoundly venerable artifacts. While appearing to be spontaneous, the entire affair was elaborately scripted, including our part in it. Our participation in the ceremony was as important as the blessing of the temples. We were the pretext upon which Rad and Mother were acting. We needed to show up in force, a mighty force. The next day at dawn, we all donned our new finery and prepared ourselves for the spectacle. I was gratified to see we were not arriving by carriage this time. A fine white charger had been found to bear me, a far more magnificent and spirited beast than Traveller, with a gilt leather saddle and bridle, and an honour guard of serious-looking war magi. The flowing cloak, the cheers from the people. Penny had bribed plenty of them for their cheers. She knew what she was doing. Made our journey almost jubilant. People even threw flowers at me. The gates of the spire were decked in banners and flower wreaths. We were led into place in the outer palace in a spot near to the temple portico, where Duke Rad II of Castal would become King Rad I of...
Penny, I said, mind to mind. What are they calling the new kingdom?
Castalshah, she replied after a pause. It leaves Ramir out of the name, but I think that's where the Ramiran dukes prefer to be anyway. And it appeases a lot of the wild Alshari nobles, who think that Castal and the new king have forgotten them.
Castalshah, I repeated. I suppose that's not too bad.
Ramira Castalshah was considered and rejected, she pointed out.
That demonstrates far more good sense than I'd expect from Mother.
Thanks.
At the appropriate time, Duke Rad came out to the cheers of the crowd. Count Sego reported publicly that the realm was in danger. The Duke asked if the Count could defend the realm, and he replied that it was beyond his power. Then the Skyfather for Castabriel tottered forward and insisted the gods were powerless, and that perhaps magic could aid. Master Dunsellin, looking considerably younger than the first time I saw him, answered the Duke that magic, as it stood, was insufficient, but that there was hope from the arcane orders that had been defending the realm. Then it was my turn. Rad summoned the heads of the orders, and Telamon, Carmella, and I rode calmly into the midst of the crowd in front of Rad, bowed, and said,
Your Grace, as your designated marshal, I report to you that the realm is in grave danger, and though the arcane orders have hoped to defend her, the bans prohibit us from doing so. You must address this with the royal censorate. And then I shut up, and Censor General Harterian came forth wearing his dreaded checkered mantle and declared that as the censorate was an agency of the king, only a royal decree could change it. Then the Skyfather said, in a creaking voice, that the gods demanded their realm be defended. That's when the Duke of Rhaemir and the newly confirmed Duke of Alsha came forth and pledged support to Rhad's leadership, each bearing the hereditary shard of the crown of King Camalavan and giving it to the Skyfather. The Skyfather, with a lot of assistance from his fellow clerics, put the three pieces together in a metal circlet forged for the occasion. Then the Skyfather implored the Dukes of Vor and Merwin to add their support, pledge their fealty, and honour the commitment of the gods. Both dukes paid a very visible show of respect for the Skyfather. He was highly venerated in the capital city, and no monarch lightly irritated a popular priest, but declined his proposal. They would bend no knee to a brother duke. They did agree to bear witness to the establishment of a united realm, to be called the Kingdom of Castalshar, and the Skyfather gave a long, rambling prayer and put the broken crown on Rhad's head. 100 doves were released. Flower petals were thrown from the spire to cover the entire place, and one of my wizards, Lance of Boon, pyrotechnic magics are a hobby of his, shot a beautiful display of mage-lit fireworks into the sky. We had a king. Yay. Rhad's first act as monarch was to declare an emergency and sign the official end of the royal censorate. Censor General Harterian formally dropped his cloak and forswore his oath to the new king. My entire order burst into cheers at that. He had a vested interest in doing so, of course. Not only was he the proud owner of a witchstone, he would also become the first royal court mage. Before that happened, however, King Rhad, his beloved queen by his side, put his seal and signature to the charters of our various orders, making me, officially, the most temporally powerful mage since the last Archmage. Yay. While Rhad was handing me the blanket-sized vellum scroll that stood as token for the hundreds of pages of parchment that detailed the charter, the very unexpected, unscripted, happened. There was a flash of light, and suddenly there were a dozen tree folk surrounding us. Chaos ensued as the new uncharted royal guard panicked and drew swords. My own war magi were just as unprepared, and some of them drew blades or wands, and I felt a lot of defensive spells suddenly go up. The tree folk were armed, after their fashion, I saw, but were not holding their weapons. They were holding various parcels. I'm amazed that no one was shot or stabbed or killed during that chaotic moment. It seemed like an opportune time for someone in authority to intervene, and I realized with horror that I was the authority. I summoned power from my sphere and amplified my voice 100-fold. Hold! I shouted. People screamed and put their hands over their ears, but no bowstrings twanged, no orders to attack were given. The tree folk stood serenely and calmly, waiting for us to stop panicking. At last the leader, an Alka male I didn't know, stood forward and bowed his head in the slightest hint of respect. When he spoke, everyone in the castle could hear him as if he were standing right in front of them.
I am Prince Almasarala of the House of Felasamas, representing the Alka Alon, who support the effort against the abomination. Do you, Rhad of House Bimin, swear to defend this land against it until your dying breath?
He asked, in perfect Narasi. I so swear, King Rhad said after a moment's hesitation, until my dying breath, mine and my house's.
Then the Tharangalan Council of Alka Alon shall aid thee in thy efforts as we can, he continued.
It sounded almost condescending, but that's just how the Alka Alon are. Something bothered me about that name, but I filed it away for later study. This was more interesting than linguistics.
To that end, we present our friend, Mage Lord Minilan, called the Spellmonger, Adept and Master, with these gifts to aid in your struggle, to be distributed in your wisdom to whom you see fit.
the prince of the Alka said, gesturing with his head. The other Alka began piling up boxes in front of me, most of them no bigger than my hand. One was brought right to my attention, however, when the prince opened it in front of me. A glittering tray of Irionite, each piece a smooth sphere about a centimetre wide, dazzled my mind and delighted my eyes.
21 stones, the lesser works of our house, given by the council to the mage lord for use in the war against the abomination. Not since our own wars. Long ago, before the void spawned the Humani, have these stones been used. They are of a special potency, and crafted to devastate and destroy. With them, you might afford a credible defense against the abomination's armies, and its other minions.
We accept them gratefully, Lord Prince, I said, in what I thought was passable Alka. They got the spirit of it, at least. I bowed very deeply, and then heard in my head,
You, spellmonger, shall be the ambassador of your kind to mine in this struggle. You shall make in your lands a place for a representative to tarry, so to bring our peoples to close counsel if need arises.
It shall be done, Lord Prince. Yeah, I'll tell off a room full of dukes, but the Alka Alon scared me. They had literally forgotten more magic than humanity had ever learned.
So shall an ambassador be sent to thee, to dwell with thee, and offer thee the counsel of the Alka Alon in the days ahead. They will instruct thee in the meaning and use of all of these gifts, and tell thee deep mysteries. For those who can sense the days to come speak constantly of our peril in the face of the abomination. Yet, since winter last, our soothsayers have felt hopeful for the first time, he continued, as the boxes and bags piled up in front of me. For through barbarous magics was born what, perhaps, may be our salvation.
Lord Prince? I asked, confused.
The stone your folk call Snowstone, he explained, never has the like been encountered by the Alka Alon. We wish to procure some, to aid in our researches.
It would be an honour to aid thee, I replied formally in Alkan.
Please don't try to speak in our language, the prince said, interrupting me. Not until you understand it better.
My apologies, Lord Prince.
We shall send thee an envoy, an embassy. Treat them with respect, and perhaps an alliance between our folk can suffice, where neither of our efforts alone might be of avail. We shall see, he finished. So does the Alka Alon add our blessing to those of the gods. King Urad, we challenge you to use thy might to defend these ancient lands from the abomination. Let all men see this and take note, he said, his voice getting slightly louder. And then they were all gone again.
Crap! Penny swore to me, mind to mind. They could have given us some warning.
They like surprises, remember? I pointed out. 21 witch stones, Penny. Almost 2 dozen new war magi to put into the field.
I know, she assured me. But I'm wondering what other goodies they just handed us.
Hopefully something proof against dragons.
That would be nice,
she admitted, but the Alka Alon have huge resources, whole systems of magic that human minds can barely understand. Just rooting through their magical garbage would be instructive.
This is amazing, Min.
Yes, I know. Now, let's wait until the end of the ceremony before we open our presents, I chided back for a change. The rest of the ceremony was pretty boring, actually, consisting of pledges of fealty by every major noble in Alshar, Castol and Ramir who was present, a few more royal appointments, and then Rad designated 9 days of festivities to celebrate the new kingdom. 9 days of parties, 9 days of court intrigue, 9 days of politics and manoeuvring and obsequious courtiers and bribes and all the stuff I hated and Penny gloried in. Okay, I didn't entirely hate it, but there are limits to what a man can take. There was one thing that was bothering me, I told Penny later that night, as we celebrated at the old temple and new order headquarters. How's your Alka Alon? Language, that is. Alka'alon was the basis for a lot of old High Perwanese, the official court language of the Majocracy for centuries. A lot of old magical texts are translated from or written in the debased form we had adapted for our use. She shrugged.
Professionally? Pretty good. The Alka didn't write much about sex magic, though, so my interest isn't acute. Why?
Something got my attention during their show, I explained. Note that they weren't an official delegation. They represented some sort of council. Remember? She nodded.
Yes.
But the Alka great houses often band together and...
I know.
I'm aware of their history, which is why the name of their council intrigued me.
What was it? I was a little distracted,
she admitted. The Ferengallen Council, I repeated. From Ferra, I'm guessing, which means to alter.
And Gala,
she finished, the implications finally occurring to her, which means attention or notice.
The council to alter attention?
She asked, confused. I'm not an expert, maybe. When you alter someone's attention, I explained patiently, you are distracting them, correct?
Well, yes, I suppose,
she agreed, still not quite understanding. That's what we seem to be to our Alka'alon allies, I said glumly. We're what they're using to distract the dead god.
Distract him from what?
Them? She asked, even more confused. That's what I'm worried about, I said. While he's distracted with us, just what in Seven Hells are they planning on doing?